morning. Hello, it's a little after 10 o'clock on Friday. That means it's time for the Real Estate Fix, and you've tuned into the right place. This is the Real Estate Fix with Rich Sherman on your hometown station, KHTS 98.1 FM and AM 1220. Thank you guys for listening today. We're going to cover some fun stuff today, but before we get to that, I've been told I was bad last week. I forgot to read this, so let me read this. I am not an attorney. I do not give legal advice. I hold a California real estate license, and I have over 30 years of experience. The opinions I express and the advice I give is strictly my own. I would encourage anyone who has real estate issues to also check with the relevant experts like attorneys, accountants, etc. That is my disclaimer, and you guys will see. We'll talk about why I do that every week later. But anyway, so today we got a couple of things. We got the market. We're going to do a little market update for you, let you know what's going on the real estate market, where prices are, where they're headed, more importantly. We're going to take, as always, take in some listener questions, talk about some stuff. We got some response to one of the things I said last week, which is great, so we're going to talk about that a little bit. We're going to talk, we got a special guest in the studio today. I'm very excited about this, my first ever in-studio guest, and it's my wife, Jane, is going to join us. Jane Sherman, real estate attorney extraordinaire. Don't judge her because she's married to me. She has impeccable taste otherwise and exceptional judgment, except that one area. She's fantastic. So we're going to have her in at the studio. We're going to talk to her about real estate law and how foreclosures work and stuff. We're also going to do Bad Bank of the Week. And then, of course, the one everyone wants me to talk about. Last week when I was on the air, I said, and I stand behind this, that we are giving away free money. We have free money for you to buy a house. If you're looking to buy a house and you are currently renting, if you're a renter, because we're on kind of a mission to get people into houses, if you're a renter, we will give you money. We will give you up to 10% of the rent you've already paid back to buy a house. We're going to talk about that a little bit at the end of the show. So we are really giving away free money. It really is a thing. So we'll talk about that a little bit as we get through the show here. Anyway, let's start with a market update. Some strange good news. Those of you who are wondering about Silicon Valley Bank, SVB, Silicon Valley Bank, and its failure, which has been all over the news. It was a bank that died in Silicon Valley and all sorts of stuff. What basically happened is Silicon Valley Bank is a bank that kind of caters to startups in Silicon Valley, tech firms, things like that, although not that exclusively. They fall into the same banking rules as anybody else. But anyway, they invested some areas they shouldn't have. They bought some bonds that they probably should not have because they were betting that the interest rate was going to stay lower than it went. And so when the interest rate went up and they lost their bet, they did so in such spectacular fashion that they are now no longer in business. Now, the reason that that is a good thing regarding real estate in general is because when the Fed raised the interest rate, it stressed the financial system. And when I say raise the interest rate, this is the steepest raise in interest rates the Fed has ever embarked on, ever. Certainly in my lifetime, I'm in my 50s, so I think ever. I'll have to check that, but I'm pretty sure ever, because we've gone up over 2.5, nearly 3 points in less than a year, and that's been led almost completely by the Fed. Now, the reason the Fed was doing that is because they're trying to cool inflation. They're worried that inflation is going too high, i.e. the price of houses has gone up nearly 20% in the last 2 years, the price of milk, the price of gas, everything else has gone up. So the Fed's way of fighting that is to make money more expensive, to raise the prime interest rate. And when you do that, when you take any system and you sort of stress it like that, when you do something that, in my view, is a little crazy, but I guess I have a narrow view, and the Fed's not asking me my advice. But when you stress a system like that, when you raise the interest rate like they have, things are going to happen. You know, if you take an engine in a car and you stress it, stuff's going to fall off. And that's kind of what happened here with the Fed's raising interest rates. So SVB Bank failed, and that's the bad news. Also, Signature Bank failed, and we almost lost First Republic, which I'm glad we didn't, because that's a bank I do some business with, and I like the people down there. They're good people down there. Anyway, so what happened is SVB Bank's going out of business is actually going to help, because the Fed was rumored at their meeting this week to raise the interest rate not just a quarter point, but a full half a point. Now, they did still raise it a quarter, which I think we all would have done what could have done without, but they only raised it a quarter, and I think the reason they raised it a quarter instead of a full half is because of the danger in the banking sector, because SVB Bank failed and Signature Bank failed, and there's some others that got close to failing, and now we're starting to see that ripple throughout the international markets. So the reason that's a good thing is it's keeping the interest rate a little bit lower. We're still hovering around 6.5% on your average 30-year fixed. It's down a little bit this week from last week, which is good. Even though the Fed raised the interest rate, the practical interest rate, the rate you actually pay to buy a house, is actually still around 6.5, not over 7, which is unfortunately I think where it's going to head. So it's actually a good thing. So SVB Bank's failure has caused everyone to kind of reevaluate the strength of the financial system, which is still very strong, but it's caused them to kind of reevaluate, and that's kept interest rates a little bit lower. It's also going to tighten up bank requirements. So what I'm saying here is if you're looking to buy a house, you might want to, you know, sometime in the next year, you might want to think about it now because housing prices will be a little bit lower a year from now, I think. Actually, I know. But the interest rate's going to be a little bit higher. And the other big bugaboo is that lending requirements are going to get stiffer because the banks are worried. All the banks are worried at least a little bit because they saw some of their compatriots go away. So they're going to tighten up lending guidelines and make it a little bit harder to get loans, and the interest rate's going to probably still go up. Even so, we've got a little bit of respite here because the interest rates have not gone up, even though the Fed raised the rate this week. And it's still relatively easy, all things considered. I wouldn't say it is easy in general, but it is relatively easy to get a loan. So what I'm saying is if you're thinking about buying a house, you might want to get on that sooner rather than later, at least investigate what your options are because that's liable to change in the future. So let's go over some numbers. So that's why SVB Bank's failure is a good thing because it's good for interest rates. But let's go over some numbers. These are interesting as well because this will tell you where the market's going. Home sale prices, understand the difference between prices and volume. This is prices. Home sale prices nationally fell year over year nationwide in February for the first time in the last 11 years. So the actual average sales price of a single-family home in the United States is now lower now than it was last month. And that's the first time that's happened in 11 years. Every year, it's gone up a little bit. So houses every month have gotten a little bit more expensive over the last 11 years, the average price. And so this is the first time it's ever fallen, which is not good news. Now, the good news is that the number of sales, understand the difference between average sales price and the number of sales, this is the number of houses sold, the number of sales is up in February, which is ending 12 months of consecutive declining sale numbers. So the number of sales is up, but the average sales price is down. And what that's telling you is a lot of buyers who were shocked out of the market by the interest rate rise, by the way, it just went through the ceiling like a rocket ship, are now kind of coming back to the market as the interest rate's beginning to stabilize. And hopefully that keeps up. But it also is telling you that the sales prices are down, which is exactly what I predicted on my first show. So it's gone pretty much the way I thought it would go. Also, and this is also a big number to take, and this is kind of the third leg of that financial stool that makes up the housing market at the moment, is that inventory numbers are still low, and they will be throughout 2023. NAR is saying, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more, NAR is saying that approximately 70% of people that are likely home sellers right now have interest rates below 4%. So if they were to sell their house with the 4% interest rate and buy another house, that other house is going to have a much higher interest rate, going to cost them a lot more money. So that's why. So you've got those three things. You've got the home, you got the average sales prices are falling. The number of sales that are going up is up. So we have a few more houses that are selling as prices fall, more are selling, which is good. But inventory is still low and will be throughout the remaining of the year. So that's going to keep the available inventory lower. So there are three types of market that we get into. There's a luxury market, there's a move-up market, and there's a first-time buyer market. And the luxury market is being shelled by this market. The interest rate going up has absolutely cratered the luxury market. If you're looking to buy a house in our area at 1.5, 1.7, 1.8, something like that, the high end of the Northern LA County market, certainly over 2 or 3 million, you can get a heck of a deal right now because that part of the market has gone soft. The move-up buyers, they're still a little bit better. There's still a lot of people moving from house A to house B, but there are a lot of them are prevented from doing that because they have interest rates that are so low. I mean, if you had let's say if you have a $700,000 mortgage and you took out a 7% interest rate, your total monthly payment without impounds would be $4,657 a month, so $4,657. Now, if you have a rate of 4%, let's say you refinanced it a year or two ago, your payment is $3,342. That's $1,300 less. Now, let's say that's 25%. Now, if it was 3%, if you got a really good rate at the beginning of the mortgage rate dive before it went up at the end of the pandemic, your payment would be $2,951. Now, that's without impounds, without taxes and insurance, but that's $1,600. So if you're going to buy the exact same house today and you have a 3% interest rate and you go to sell that house and buy just the same house, you'd wind up with a payment that's $1,600 a month more, almost double. So that's going to keep a lot of people from selling, and that is not a good thing. Now, luckily, what's keeping the market alive, and God bless this segment of the market, is first-time buyers. First-time buyers are still out there. They're still hungry. Inventories are low, so that's kind of keeping prices okay. And the first-time buyers are what's powering the market because they're first-time buyers who are upset they couldn't get 3.5 or 4. But, hey, 6.5 is better than 7 or 7.5, which is unfortunately, I think, where we're going. So that's kind of the market right now. So the upshot is if you have a house to sell, market is going to come down a little bit. We're still looking at 5 to 10% by the end of the year, by this time next year. So if you have a house to sell, do it now. If you're looking at buying a house, now's not a bad idea to start investigating your options, because we have a little bit of a break in the interest rate right now, and it's still relatively easy compared to where it's going to go to get a mortgage. So now's a good time to look at those as well. So what I'm saying is, I suppose this is typical realtor advice, a little self-serving, I suppose, is if you got a house to sell, look at doing it now. If you're looking to buy a house, do it now. The market is not going to get better for either of those. It's going to get choppier as time goes on. Interest rates will get higher and prices will still continue to fall. And you're never going to, as a buyer, if you wait for prices aren't going to fall enough for you to make up the difference in the interest rate that you're going to have to pay. So keep that in mind as well. All right, let's move on. That's the market update. Let's move on a little bit. Let's move on to questions, my favorite part of the show. And the first question I got to Tony W., Alex R., Glenn C., Myra A., and everyone else who asked, we're going to talk about the free money thing at the end of the show. I promise I'll go over it again. It seems to be what most people want to talk about. So we're going to talk about it in the third segment. That's no problem. It's very straightforward. It won't take that long. I'll answer all your questions. I promise. I've answered most of these in writing already. But let's move on to some foreclosure stuff, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll get Jane on in here. I got a question. So I got a question from an Allison L. I've owned my home since 2002. I fell behind during the pandemic. I was in foreclosure for about a year and a half, but now that's over, and my bank has said I need to give them $47,000. That's built-up money in a forbearance, I assume. I tried to send them my regular payment. They sent it back. I can't lose my home. What do I do to stop the foreclosure? We can ask Jane about that a little bit when she comes in here, but what I tell you first off is give me a call. The first thing you need to do is engage your bank. You need to talk to your bank, and you need to say, I don't want to lose my home. What options do I have? And there are options out there. There are options that you get because of the law in California. There are options that you get because it's just common sense. There are options that you get because it's good for the bank, or all three. But the key is to engage your bank. Give me a call. You can call me anytime. I'll be happy to take your call. I'll be happy to talk to you. I'll be happy to give you advice. And again, we do this all for free. We do foreclosure defense for free. I've been doing it for over 30 years. I'm very good at it. Our success rates are around 80%. Nationally, if you go to defend yourself from a foreclosure, I'm told, about 8%. Our success rate's 80. I think you're better off with us than without us. And again, it's totally free. So even if you just have questions, just call up and ask. Send me an email, whatever you'd like. We'll be happy to help you. So I think we're getting ready. Getting ready to go to break? You like break? Okay. I want to say thank you again to our sponsor, Sam Chong at the Mortgage Hub. You can reach Sam through our website, through the station's website. Thank you, Sam. Appreciate your help. And Sam's the guy you want for all your mortgage needs. We go to Sam all the time. He is a veritable wealth of information. And in the meantime, let's go to break. We come back. We'll have Jane in studio. We'll ask her some legal questions. And this is Rich Sherman with the Real Estate Fix on KHTS, your hometown station. Hello, everybody. Again, you're listening to The Real Estate Fix with Rich Sherman on your hometown station, KHTS 98.1 FM and AM 1220. And we have a very, very special guest in studio today. I think she's special. Everyone I know thinks she's special. My wife, Jane Sherman, has agreed somewhat. I had to kind of drag her in here, but she's agreed to help us out today. She's a real estate attorney. She's the brains of the operation. She's the one with the law degree and the MBA. I'm just the guy with a real estate license. So she's the one who answers most of the tough questions, and I ask her questions, and I parrot what she says, and that makes me look smart. So continuing that long tradition, we've got some foreclosure questions for you, so I hope you'll enjoy this. All right, so the first question, we get this question all the time. It's going to sound silly. But we get all the time, what is a foreclosure? People honestly don't know. And I don't think they don't know. I think they know that the bank has taken back the house. But I don't think they understand kind of what kicks off a foreclosure. So that'd be my first question. What is a foreclosure?
Well, first let me say good morning.
Oh, good morning.
Good to be here. Glad I can help. I'm not giving anybody legal advice. I should start out by saying that to make the state bar happy. But I do believe in legal information and making sure people have everything they need to make a good decision. So starting out, obviously, it's important to understand what the process is. So a foreclosure is where your bank, who holds the mortgage, which is the security interest on your home, hires a third party, a trustee, to conduct a sale of real property in order to collect fees that are due on it. Now, this is typically loan payments. A homeowner falls behind on their mortgage payments over a period of time. It also could be for real estate taxes. There are some, if there are other amounts due, but typically it's the mortgage payment that they're behind on. And either through judicial or non-judicial foreclosure, the bank attempts to get their debt satisfied.
Okay, so that was a lot. So basically, if you don't pay your mortgage payment, the bank will then file a lawsuit to foreclose on you. And it is a lawsuit.
Judicial foreclosure is a lawsuit utilizing the courts. The non-judicial foreclosure, which is the most common in California by far, is the non-judicial sort that doesn't use the courts, but instead uses a private procedure where they hire the trustee and sell it at a public sale.
Well, actually, I'm glad you started getting into that, because we have two questions here. The first one is, I'll read you the first one. It's from Pamela B. She says, I'm about 2 months behind on my mortgage, and I'm worried my lender will foreclose soon. How long do I have before I have to move? So she's asking about time frames, basically, with the foreclosure. So now, I think typically, correct me if I'm wrong, but you have to be at least, I think it's 30 days behind before they can start the officially start the foreclosure process.
Yeah, yeah. You know, practically speaking, you're going to be 30 days late on a mortgage before the bank steps in and starts the process. In addition to that, the homeowner bill of rights, I've been around for about 10 years now, dictates that the bank must contact the homeowner at least 30 days prior to beginning the process. So yes, it's a minimum of 30 days. In reality, banks often, they don't jump right to it. It'll take 90 to 120 days, although you probably have more experience getting going.
I'd say that's about right. Most banks, bigger banks might wait even longer. Really aggressive banks will probably have about 90 to 120 days from your behind point before they actually come after you. They're going to send you all sorts of letters and stuff before that.
Yeah.
But it's going to take a little while before they get there. So in Pamela's case, she's only 2 months behind, so she's got at least another month. She doesn't have at least, so they'll give her notice. I don't know if she's received notice or not. Then they'll have to wait 30 days when she has some sort of notice. Then what's the next step there? What do they do next? What's the next step?
The next official step is going to be the notice of default. That is the first formal act for the bank to foreclose. It's scary because it may not be a legal case filed in court, but it's recorded in the county recorder's office. And it starts the timeline and the clock ticking for the actual foreclosure sale. Plus, that's the first formal notice that's public. So it will create a lot of activity, calling and knocking on the door and mailing to the homeowner. So that's the first official step, is the notice of default.
Yeah, so that's the timeline. So they'll have to wait at least 30 days from your initial not paying your mortgage, your default.
Yeah.
They'll probably wait 90 to 120 days. So she's probably got another 2 to 4 months, or about a month to 2 months left. Then they'll file the notice of default. We call it an NOD because we're fancy that way. A notice of default. And then the notice of default lasts for how long? How long do they have for the notice of default? What's next?
Notice of default is a 90-day notice, essentially, to cure the default. It's supposed to give the homeowner 90 days in order to get that taken care of. And if that doesn't happen in 90 days, the bank can then, at the end of that 90 days, file a notice of sale, which takes place much faster. In 3 weeks, the house can go to sale. The notice must be posted on the property, and it is also recorded. And then the sale can be held as little as 3 weeks later.
So to review, so you got to be at least 30 days later on your mortgage or more. Then the bank will file a notice of default. That's got to go at least 90 days. And that's the law on this up, right? 90.
Yeah.
They have to wait at least 90 days. So on the 91st day or thereafter, they can then file a notice of sale, which is a two-part process.
Yep.
Not true in every state, but that's how it works in California. Then when they file a notice of sale, they have to wait another 21 days before they can actually conduct the foreclosure sale.
Yes.
So from the point where they file the notice of default, which is kind of the big watershed, you've got, 90 and 21, so 111 days.
Yeah.
You have 100. So if the bank's really on it, it's 111 days before they can actually go to foreclosure sale. So not quite, but a little under 4 months.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the time you have to defend yourself if this sort of thing happens. So if you get one of these, if you get a notice of default on your house, which is a big deal, you have 111 days from the filing, and you'll probably get it about a week after the filing, to get something done. Otherwise, you will lose your house. So again, California, different states, but this is a state thing. In California, it goes delinquency, notice of 30 to 120 days, notice of default, NOD, 90 days, and then notice of sale, 21 days, and then they actually conduct the foreclosure. And I think those time frames are important because people don't often know what they are, and they freak out because they get this what looks like a very important legal document, and it is on their mail or on their front door, and they go completely nuts. So you don't have to. The first thing to do is just calmly react to these things.
That does bring up a good point I should mention by way of information. Any notice other than the notice of default and notice of sale, isn't a notice of anything particular whatsoever. We see it's very common. I have clients call and they've gotten a notice of intent to foreclose. I'm using air quotes here.
Can't see that.
Notice.
It's radio. They can't see.
Notice of intent to foreclose is probably the most common.
Notice of intent to accelerate.
Notice of intent to accelerate. Yes, yeah, that's the other one. They've gone to foreclosure, I think, more because people freak out about that, understandably.
Yeah, it scares people.
It doesn't mean anything. And in fact, it might not even be from the bank who holds your mortgage. It may be from some other company looking to take advantage. So it's important to know those the notices that mean something and those that don't.
You know, let's talk about that a little bit because there's a whole cottage industry that's sprung up around these what we refer to in the office as fake notices. And if you guys are curious, I have a file of them. One day I'll make a nice book of fake notices. It's hysterical because they look very official. They look very, very much like NODs.
Yeah.
Sometimes they look like court summons.
Yeah.
We've seen them dressed up every way you can possibly imagine. And what happens is you get something in the mail, it looks official, and it says they're selling your house in a week. They're selling your house in a month. We're thinking about selling your house next month, next Tuesday at 5. Whatever it is, and the idea, it's always the same. Call us, and we can help you, and there's usually some sort of fee involved. Sometimes it's a law firm who wants to defend you, and I'm not saying anything bad about law firms. There's better ones. There are worse ones. But at least attorneys are allowed to. But more often than not, it's just a straight-up scam. We see them all the time. And when we see them, when clients bring them in, a bit of a unique position because we do this for free and have for so long. So people bring us stuff once they're already clients or they come in as clients and say, I got this in the mail. What does this mean? And I keep the really hysterical ones because they're, oh, my gosh, they're it's almost the art of counterfeiting. And it's not illegal for companies to do that. It should be, but it's not. Now, it is illegal for them to take money up front to do loan modification work and a lot of other things that get into, but it's not necessarily illegal. So the things to look for are a notice of default, which will say notice of default right across the top of it.
Yep.
And it'll have it in like 6 different languages.
Yep.
And you'll get it certified. And the other one, once you've got a notice of default, is a notice of sale, which they're supposed to post on your front door. And they don't always post it on your front door, but they're supposed to, and somebody's going to swear that they did. But those are it. It's a notice of sale or notice of default. They'll both say intent to sell on them. And really, the first thing you want to what would you tell people the first thing to do? They get a notice in the mail. They're not sure if it's real or not. What's the first thing you tell them to do?
Well, unfortunately, I wouldn't call the phone number on the notice. I would call another professional. I know you handle stuff, obviously.
Sure.
Not a lot of realtors get involved with the pro bono, the assistance for the homeowners. So I can't say just call any realtor, but some will help you. A title person, if you happen to know one, can look up the title records, and that's where you're going to find out anything that should be recorded on the property. Also, you can just show these notices to people familiar with them, realtors or an attorney. Rich and I can look at these pretty quickly and determine whether they're legitimate. So contact a professional is really – because the clock is ticking. Because if you've gotten notice, even if it's not a legitimate notice, it means your name is out there for being delinquent and you're on people's lists and it's in the works somewhere.
Sometimes a fake notice could be based on an actual event.
Yeah, you may have had a notice of default recorded on your property and you didn't know it for a variety of reasons. So it's definitely the point at which you need to start paying attention and to get some help.
So the key is to ask. I mean, you check the title record, it'll have it in there. If a notice of default's been filed against you, it'll be in the title record. You can check the court records. These things are public, so you can definitely check. But let's get back to a couple questions. We started to talk about this a little bit. What is the difference? It's a question I get all the time. I know you do too. Between a non-judicial foreclosure and a judicial foreclosure.
Well, that was what we touched on a little bit before. Yeah. The judicial foreclosure, fairly self-explanatory. It goes through the court system. And a bank will sue a homeowner, and it's like any other lawsuit. You file a complaint. There's an answer file. There's discovery. You go through the court system, and they presumably obtain a judgment against you, and that in that way they get the house sold to reimburse them for the costs or the debt that's owed. But that doesn't happen in California very much. We
Almost
have
never.
Several, yeah, and largely that's we have several laws in place, one action rule and security first laws that protect homeowners from multiple actions by banks to both take the property and if the home is underwater and they owe more than it's worth to get that. So generally banks in California are going with non-judicial. It's much faster. It's allowed by the terms of the deed of trust that you signed with the bank. So it's a private action. And like I was mentioning before, the bank will hire a trustee company who will, they don't take title to the property. They will conduct a public sale of it. They will give the notice on the courthouse steps. It literally happens on the courthouse steps. There is an auction, and then the house is sold, and then the debt is satisfied, and then if there is anything left, in theory, that goes to the homeowner, but I've never seen that happen.
Yeah, money rarely makes its way to the homeowner. It's amazing the fees they can run up doing this. So in a non-judicial, and this is Eric R.'s question, was what is a non-judicial foreclosure, if you're listening out there, Eric? So a non-judicial foreclosure is what we see in California most of the time because it's faster, it's less expensive for the bank, it's better, blah, blah, blah. But that's basically where the bank says, we promise everything in this package is true and correct. Thank you very much, court system. Now we're going to go ahead and do our own thing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, I don't want to say certified, but looked over, watched over, I don't know, published with the court. Maybe is the best way to put that. But it's not, the court isn't actually so much involved in it.
It can be if you take legal action, but sure. Otherwise there isn't any automatic review of the process.
So the foreclosure process is dependent on the bank, who banks have been known to make mistakes. We've seen some whoppers. Dependent on the bank giving correct information to the court, and the court just says, all right. And then if nobody contests it, it just goes along its merry way.
Well, actually, the court isn't involved at all, so they don't even have to okay it on any level. It's basically to the extent a court looks at it, it's just the bank fills out documents saying, yes, we check a box that 30 days ago or 30 days before we started, we talked to the homeowner about their foreclosure options, and yes, we promised we were good and we followed all the rules, and somebody signs something. And that's it. And nobody even reviews it unless the homeowner brings a lawsuit.
So basically the inmates are allowed to run the asylum.
Absolutely.
Okay. Just wanted to be clear on that. And for those of you who are out there who are listening, who are in foreclosure, who have a foreclosure problem or just a question, please call. I'll be happy to help. You can always I'll give you my personal cell phone number. I give this out on the air all the time. It's 661-714-1400. I will do you the courtesy of not giving out your phone number.
Thank
you're not
you.
As keen about that, since you're the one with the law degree and the MBA. But you can call me anytime, and I can ask her. That's not a bad way to do that. But it's kind of ridiculous when you peel back the layers of the process to see how it really works, because it's terrifying. I don't know that you should be able to rely, or that you should be allowed to rely, on the person you owe money to as to whether they can foreclose on your house. There are rules, certainly, but you can't always rely on the banks following them. I mean, we see this over and over again where the banks get dinged, and they'll get some sort of fine from the government for something, but it doesn't get your house back. Or if you bring a case against the bank, if you win a judgment, you still don't get the house back. Judges are loath to return houses. So this is not the person who owns it now. It's not their fault that this mess happened with the bank. So it is kind of crazy. I want to touch on one last thing before I let you go. Something you and I were talking about this morning, which I found hysterical. You looked up this morning what the California Association of Realtors guidebook on foreclosure defense was, right? You took a look at what you were talking about this morning?
It was the Department of Real Estate.
Oh, sorry, Department of Real Estate.
Yes.
So the Department of Real Estate, an august body who we love and support, we think they're wonderful, and they do a lot of great things for the public. The Department of Real Estate put out a sort of cliff notes to foreclosure and foreclosure defense. This is the easy read. Should make sense to everybody. They did the best they possibly could to boil it all down. How many pages is that guide?
68 pages.
So to make that clear, the simple Cliff Notes version of how to defend yourself from a foreclosure in California, put out by the California Association, put out by the Department of Real Estate, who would very much like to have you defend yourself from foreclosures. They have no desire to see foreclosures happen. Even them doing their best to boil it down got it down to 68 pages. This is the coloring book version, and it's 68 pages. So that should give you some clue as to how difficult foreclosures are and how hard they are to defend and how hard they are to kind of work with. You need help. You need expertise. Like I said, we've been at this forever. I have 30 years of defending people from foreclosure and things of that nature for free. Janie's been doing it just as long. And like I said, hopefully you just need me in a foreclosure case, because it's much easier to just go to the bank and try to negotiate these things out. And you get farther most of the time with the threat of litigation than actual litigation. But that can't always be avoided, and sometimes litigation just has to happen. And when that happens, have you met my wife, Jane? So we're equipped to kind of do all that sort of stuff. Unfortunately, we do the foreclosure defense stuff for free. Can't do a lawsuit completely for free. I know people get confused. But Rich, she's your wife, and you said you'd help us for free. Well, I'll introduce you to her, and she'll take the case as pro bono if she can. I probably shouldn't have said that. You'd probably be mad at me for saying that.
Yeah, you're not helping.
Yeah, you know, for somebody who complains about pro bono cases, you have a lot of them.
I know.
Even ones I didn't volunteer you for.
Oh, most of them come from you.
Well, I'm a helper.
I am a soft touch.
I'm a helper. Well,
Well, my frustration though with the lawsuits is partly that they're tough. I mean, even when the homeowner is completely in the right, black and white, the bank has violated the homeowner bill of rights in California or other federal laws. Courts and judges are just not very cooperative on following the law there. They think of most of these issues as minor. And I've had a judge in a case that that was very black and white, actually probably one of the ones I've had that's the most clear-cut, a violation, client paying on a loan modification for a couple of years. And along the way, the bank decided that they had forgotten about some taxes. And although they were paying on time, had done this for some time, had this huge tax bill, say they had to be paid off, and they didn't do so, and the house was foreclosed on. This was a pretty clear violation. Really, I mean, you don't get them that straightforward. It's usually this person said that or what have you. And I sat in court to go, and I filed a case, and I tried to get initially a restraining order to prevent the foreclosure sale from taking place. And the judge from the bench simply looked at me and said, but they were behind on their mortgage though, right? Well, yes, Your Honor. And of course, I explained the law and that there was a modification in place, fully documented, certified, et cetera. He said, well, they should have really paid that and refused to hear the case or do anything about it.
Nice that the judge had an opinion on the subject, I suppose, however incorrect. So yeah. The point there is, even if the law is in place, even if the law is there to protect you, does not mean it's going to be followed by the bank, and it doesn't mean it's going to be followed by the courts. Most courts, I think, follow the law and good on them for doing that, but it still can go south. It's that complicated, and it's that big a deal because you're talking about property rights, which go back, you know, it's kind of the foundation of most laws, property rights, I think.
Yeah.
Not criminal law, that is. So it can be an absolute mess. So if you've got a foreclosure issue, if you've got something like that going on, the sooner you get in front of it, the sooner you call, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah.
And we're certainly there to help you. So we're anytime you'd like, we're there to help. So, I got another question for you. I like this a lot. So, because I know we get this a lot. So this is from a guy named David B. I could have picked a dozen of these, but this is a guy, David B. had the best one. My house is in foreclosure and my bank never sent me anything. Meaning, I guess he didn't get any notice.
Mm-hmm.
I only found out because I got calls and mailers telling me I have to sell before I lose my home. Talked about that a little bit. But since I never got anything from my bank, my friends tell me they can't foreclose.
Yeah, unfortunately.
They have not observed his rights.
No, they haven't. And I understand the frustration because the banks aren't following the rules. And if I pull any file out, I promise you I'll find several ways that they did not follow the rules. Typically, the Homeowner Bill of Rights, HBOR in California. I hear that a lot, and it's not unreasonable to think that, except it's wrong. The bottom line is that the banks, there are a lot of procedural requirements. With the Homeowner Bill of Rights, it's single point of contact that you have to have. They have to give you 30 days notice before initiating foreclosure. There are some important ones, like dual tracking. They're prevented from proceeding with a foreclosure while they're processing a loan modification application. So, they all the time they violate some of the more procedural parts of the law, and those will not prevent the bank from foreclosing. I have never seen a judge stop the bank from foreclosing under the circumstances. The bank has never wanted to do so. Some of the more serious ones, dual tracking, if they foreclose while there's a modification pending, we've been able to get more traction with. But regardless of how in violation of the law is or the bank is, you have to get on it as quickly as possible. It's weird as an attorney, but I'm telling you, the minute you have to hire an attorney, and certainly if you have to show up in court for something, things have already gone horribly wrong. You got to get ahead of it as much as possible.
Well, the banks know that, and so they use it as a strategy.
Exactly.
It's very rare that a bank, even if the bank has 100% violated the law, you can jump in here if you think I'm wrong, violated the law, black letter law, and they know they've done wrong, but they're still on a course of action, they're not likely to pull up until you get right to the edge of court because, and we tell this to clients all the time, the bank's incremental cost do not go up with a lawsuit. The homeowner's incremental cost go through the roof.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you have to defend yourself from a foreclosure, some sort of foreclosure defense, and I don't mean these kooky to produce the note defenses or these fly-by-night things that you see from these mills. I mean an actual, the bank has done wrong, we have actual evidence they have violated, this has to go to court. You're looking at, what, $30,000 to $60,000 just to get started?
Yeah, that won't get you to trial, but that'll get you through the first couple of motions. And that, so, you know, banks try to bury in paperwork and litigation fees.
Well, because again, their costs haven't gone up, but the homeowner's costs have gone $30,000 to $60,000 up, and nothing may have even happened yet.
Yeah.
So the goal is to try to keep people out of court if we possibly can, because you've already, if you're the homeowner, you've already lost at least part of the battle if you have to go to court.
Yeah.
Whereas the bank doesn't necessarily. You know, if you have to sue B of A, their costs are not going up. They have an entire office building in every state full of attorneys, at least a floor, if not an entire building, full of attorneys who are ready to go. They're on salary. They're not on commission. They're not paid by the lawsuit. They're not hourly. So it doesn't matter. Their costs make no difference. But to the homeowner, it's huge. And the bank knows that. So they use that kind of stalling tactic. They use these sort of things because they want to test the homeowner's resolve. Oh, you think we did wrong? Well, it looks like we did. That's fine. They would never admit this, but okay. We're not going to cave in. We're not going to give you what you want. Let's see how far you'll go. So you file the lawsuit and you get in through the first rounds of what interrogatories are where you go back and forth with basic questions.
Discovery.
See, that's why she has a law degree. I'd have sounded smarter about that if I'd asked you first. Anyway, so you go through the first kind of preliminary rounds, and you still haven't even seen the inside of a courtroom yet, and you're 60 grand into this thing in probably, what, 2 to 3 years of your life? And maybe you're still in the house, maybe you're not. So you're all this money, all this time, and then the bank, how many times has this happened? Then the bank, a week before a trial or even the day of the trial, will suddenly come out and say, oh, okay, let's see if we can settle this.
Yep.
And one of the advantages to a bank settling is doesn't go in the record, so it doesn't become precedent for some other case.
Yeah,
and of course, judges like that because they don't have to render a ruling because judges are not keen to do property rulings that I've seen. No judge wants to seem to upset the apple cart in California. At least, it doesn't matter how wrong the homeowner has been. It's like the case you were citing. I'm terribly sorry about that. There was a famous one I tell friends off the air all the time about he almost got held in contempt for over something very similar in Palmdale. Mm. But that's a story for another time. Still would have liked it. I would like to have seen you in jail for a little bit. I'd like that sort of thing. Maybe that's just me. Anyway, I've overshared, haven't I? Anyway, thank you guys. I thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you, Jane, for coming in. I appreciate it.
You're
listening to The Real Estate Fix with Rich Sherman on KHTS. We're going to break for some more commercials, pay some bills. When we come back, we're going to talk about free money and the bad bank of the week. This is Rich Sherman. You're listening to KHTS. Hello. You're listening to The Real Estate Fix with Rich Sherman on your hometown station, KHTS 98.1 FM and AM 1220. And it is getting to be the last segment of the show here, so I have a few more minutes with you, a few other things I want to touch on. We want to talk about our bad bank of the week, and we're going to talk about free money to buy a house. But before we do that, as listeners, I'd like you guys to do me a favor. I like it when Jane is in the studio. I like it a lot. It's the first time I've ever done this, and I decided I like it an awful lot. So I want her to come back, but she's not going to do that because I asked her to. So she's looking at me through the window now. She knows where I'm going and doesn't like this idea. This is a fabulous idea, though. If you guys would like to have Jane, if you have legal questions or just because you'd like her more than me, which is fine, I'm totally good with that, let me know. Send me an email at thefixwithrich. Or call me at 714-1400. You call my cell phone or call through the station. But tell me you'd like more Jane on the air. Because if we get more of this, maybe I'll get her to come in more. Because she doesn't seem to like it when I say, hey, can you please come in? Although she did it for me, which is very nice, and for you guys. But she knows more about this even than I do. She is an exceptional attorney, and she takes pro bono cases all the time. So tell me you want more Jane, and we'll see what we can do. All right, let's move on. So I think we're going to have my favorite segment has become Bad Bank of the Week. I love the Bad Bank of the Week stories. I don't love it for the client. But what I do love is that we tell these stories on the air, we then send them to the bank, and the banks usually change their behavior a little bit. However, not in this case. So bad bank of the week this week, and I think we're going to have little trophies made and start sending them to the banks because I think that would be adorable. Bad bank of the week this week is, once again, we've only done this twice, and they've already gotten the award twice. Actually got the first sort of before there was an award. Anyway, Carrington Mortgage Services. Now, I'm not sure why they have the word services in their name because they must not understand what the word services mean. Carrington is a proper noun. Mortgage, I think they got down, but services, I think they fall a little short on. So we've had this file ongoing. An older woman, she's got a reverse mortgage. I talked to you guys about this in my first show. We're just trying to find out two things from Carrington. Two things. Is this house in foreclosure? And if so, why? Now, I know it's in foreclosure because I've checked the title record, as we were talking about earlier in the show. So I know it's in foreclosure, but if they'll tell me, if they'll admit that it's in foreclosure, and keep in mind the clock is ticking on this, and they'll tell me why, which is the more important question, then I can fix it. So far, just to tell you why Carrington is winning the Bad Bank of the Week award, it has taken us over 3 weeks from them confirming they had written authorization to accept our authorization to speak to us. And on Monday, they had our authorization, and they gave us some information. And then on Tuesday and Wednesday, they didn't. So not only is this the authorization they can't seem to get, but they also keep losing it. We're happy to resend it, but it feels a little bit like they're playing a game with us. Because keep in mind, every day that goes by, the fees on this go up. So even if we get it out of foreclosure, it's still going to cost more money. I'm going to get into that in a second. So it's taken 3 weeks to get authorized, and it's taken another 3 weeks to get the records we asked for. Now, those of you who are listening should know, the rule on the subject is, if you have a mortgage and you've got a problem with that mortgage, or even if you don't, if you want the record to your mortgage and you ask your bank, you send in what's called a qualified written request, which means you put it in writing, hey, please give me a copy of my my mortgage records going back to when the loan was started, they have to. They have to give it to you, and they have to do it within 30 days. That's the rule. The banks violate that pretty frequently, and that's okay, but at least that is the rule. So 3 weeks, we're still waiting on records, although we got some of them. We got most of them at this point. But we got records from Carrington, and this is the real reason they're the bad bank of the week. It's not even the horrible communication. It's not the losing the paperwork. It's not the what I feel is clearly, let's just say they make money through incompetence. So I feel like they're leaning into it. And I'm going to explain why right now. The records we got are hysterical. If this didn't apply to a real person who's really suffering because of this, it would be funny because it's ridiculous. They sent us a series of 6 pages. Her entire loan is 6 pages long. It's a reverse mortgage, which already tells me that we don't have all the records. It should be longer than that. It's only 6 pages long, the entire mortgage. It's supposed to be every penny that's gone in, every penny that's gone out, which would be fine, except everything with Carrington is done via code. It doesn't say what charges are for. It just has a code. And they said, we will give you the codes. So they sent us 9 codes. However, there are a total of 20 listed in this document. Now, that means there are 11 codes they didn't send us. So we reached back out to him and said, hey, we have these 11 codes. See, these are the codes that they forgot to send us. The code that differentiates attorney's fees, property preservation fees, property inspection fees, and appraisal fees. In other words, all the fees associated with the foreclosure. So we went through and we got the codes from them. And this is just in the last few months. These are the codes that have been applied to her property. She's had 5 different attorney fee charges, 5 of them. She's had 2 different property preservation fee charges. I don't know what a property preservation fee is. I mean, I know how much it is. It's $55 apparently every time, sometimes twice in the same month. She's had 6 property inspection fees at $120 a pop. This is the most well-inspected property in the state of California at this point. Carrington Mortgage has done such a thorough job inspecting this property, yet we can't get a copy of any written inspections of any sort, despite the fact it's been inspected 6 times. My client is paying for it at $120 a pop, yet no one can find these inspections or give them to us or tell them why they were done to begin with. But they will tell us they won't reverse the fees. And my favorite, 2 different appraisals within the last 9 weeks. Now, why Carrington Mortgage could possibly need 2 different appraisals in a 9-week time frame for a house that I want to underline should not be in foreclosure anyway, I couldn't really tell you. But such is the magic with Carrington, and that is why they're winning the Bad Bank of the Week award this week. I think, yeah, we'll find a trophy place. We'll get some actual awards made and get them sent out to them, because I don't know if it'll brighten their days, but it'll brighten mine. Anyway, so yeah, it, all told, just with the attorney's fees, property presentation fees, property inspection fees, and 2 appraisals that Carrington has done without the client's knowledge or permission on this reverse mortgage in the last couple of months, that's over $4,000 that they are charging her. We'll see what we can do about getting those reversed. We'll see about getting our mortgage back on track. It looks like it's what they're calling unpaid taxes, and it looks like have been paid. So we should be able to get that sorted out. But yeah, Carrington is for sure our bad bank of the week. Now, I'm told by producer Andrew that we're running out of time, so I promised you guys I would touch on this. I want to make sure we get to it this week. Free money to buy a house. It is no more complicated than that. It is literally free money to buy a house. If you are renting a property, just a renter, because I think you should be an owner, because I think everyone who rents should own, and rental rates are going through the roof. Now, please, if you're a landlord, don't get mad at me. I'm a landlord as well. I have property that I rent as well. I'm not going to crater the rental market in Southern California, trust me. But if you are a renter and you want to be an owner, give me a call. We can give you 10% of the rent you have already paid. I don't go to your landlord and say, you got to give me the money. This money comes from me, comes from my office, comes from the affiliate services that we use as well. Everybody pitches in. But if the idea is to get you into a house and you otherwise wouldn't. So if you're paying even $2,000 a month, that's $24,000 a year. That's $2,400 we can give you to help buy a house. You've been there for 3 years. What is that? 2, 4, 6. That's $3,200 we can give you. Sorry, $6,200 to give you. I can do math. $6,200 we can give you. And that's if you're just running at $2,000 a month. If you're running at $5,000, it's even more. So it is literally free money. All you have to do is call me. I'm Rich Sherman. I'm at 661-714-1400. And again, I am giving away money, 661-714-1400. You do have to buy a house, but we will give you money to do so. Again, I'm Rich Sherman. This is The Real Estate Fix with Rich Sherman on KHTS. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for sharing part of your Friday with me. I'm always here to help. Be well.